Repeated disturbances are not acceptable at this meeting. And with that, I hand you over to our first speaker of the evening, Craig, who has come to share his experience. Thank you.
Thanks.
My name's Craig, I'm an addict.
Hi, Craig.
It's a pleasure and an honour, privilege to be up here. There is a solution group's first anniversary, which I'm sure it will be the first of many. You know, because I know many of the people within this group, and I know they're you know, they're passionate about this way of life, and also they know that their lives depend upon it, you know. I think that's what a lot of it comes down to, you know. We embarked on a new way of living, a new way of life, which I was much in need of, you know, most definitely. You know, I tried doing it my way, you know, I was a fine one for doing what I wanted when I wanted it, you know, and it didn't really work out, you know. Life was becoming very much hard work again. Life used to be hard work for me, from the very beginning. I'm one of them people, I know many people are like this, not everyone starts their life off like this, but I had difficulty just living, you know, especially around other people. Interacting with others was virtually impossible for me. I'd prefer to isolate by myself, you know. If I was going to join the army, I'd be the sniper, I'd be the one by myself, you know, hiding somewhere else. You know, I wouldn't be part of the gang that's getting involved in everything. You know, and that inability to mix, to get on, that was the biggest problem I had for years and years and years. You know, until I found drugs, you know, until I started getting out of my head, and life took off. I was like, this is the missing part. You know, this is what's been missing all the time. You know, I started to feel a sense of freedom, a freedom from the fear and anxiety that I'd always, always had. You know, I was a very anxious person, you know, and when I got high, you know, I felt an ease and comfort, you know, that I'd never felt before, you know, and I loved it, you know. I finally got a hobby that I really relished, you know, and I went for it, you know, really did, you know. I was sometimes using with people where it was a bit of a badge of honour. The more you did, you know, the more bravado there was about it. And I was like, well, finally, something I'm good at and I'm excelling at, you know, look at me go. That's how it started off. That's how a lot of it continued. Towards the end, though, I was hiding how much I was using, how often I was using. I was still doing more and more than what I'd ever done before. I didn't want anyone to know, you know, because I realised there was a serious problem going on. You know, I had little control over what I was doing. You know, it used to scare me, you know, how easily I could, I'll give you an example. The last time I went on the binge, the morning before, or the morning that I started that binge, I woke up and it was one of them days. I'm sorting my life out. This is it. These days only come to like, you know, sometimes once every 4 years, something like that. And I'm like, this is it, I'm doing it. I'm going to work, I'm going to be productive, I'm going to do what I need to be doing, I'm going to get healthy, everything else. You know, I was on fire that morning. I was so determined, so certain, so sure that I was going to turn the corner and make something of my life. And it came about 11 o'clock in the morning. and I was at McDonald's. And I was going back to the car, and I was thinking, it'd be nice if I just had a little bit, you know. It's a nice day. Why not? If I start now, then I won't, you know, I won't be scratching around at 3:30 in the morning trying to find a dealer that's still working. You know, I can do that at 7 o'clock in the evening instead. You know, this is the same person who, 3 hours earlier, was going to sort the rest of his life out. You know, I knew what happened when I started using. You know, it was hell for leather every time. You know, just the thought of a drug, you know, and I'd be multiplying it before I even got there. You know, But that's how easy that obsession, that thinking would grab me. You know, and that obsessive thinking, you know, I know it's never going to leave me, you know. If I tried to will it to by myself, you know, there was only one thing I really sort of would rely upon before embarking on this program, was my own willpower. You know, that's what was going to get me out of situations. That's what was going to sort my life out. That's how I was going to control my drug use or stop doing drugs. You know, my willpower means nothing when it comes to giving up drugs. It's good in other situations, but when it comes to stopping drugs, it's not there. I have the will, but I don't have the power to do it. And, you know, and that day was a fine example of it. You know, it evaporated. You know, my willpower was useless. And I recognise now that I was never, ever going to get that willpower to work in them situations when it came to drugs. You know, and I know that now because, you know, it's something that the book speaks of, a spiritual malady, you know, and a sense of restlessness, irritableness and discontent, it says. You know, that's my nature, you know. I'm restless, I can't keep still. I said I was full of fear, full of anxiety. You know, that's that restlessness, discontent. I'm never quite happy, it's never quite right, you know. Sometimes, never mind, it's not quite right, it's bloody miles away from where I want it to be. You know, I've got ideas that up here. This is where my life should be. This is how great my life should be. This is who I should be and where I'm going. And I'm at the bottom of the mountain all the time. I never seem to be getting to the top of that mountain. You know, and I can't live with that. You know, lack of performance or success in my own life. You know, and irritable. You know, I'm very irritable. Things annoy me. You annoy me. I annoy me. My thinking annoys me. You know, I so easy to just get annoyed by little things, big things, anything. You know, it's not going my way. You know, it just that's just how I am. But when I'm like that, you know what? Life becomes a bit unbearable. You know. And I always turn to the thing that I know is always guaranteed to work, you know, quick results, you know, and that was using, getting high. You know, I knew, I do that, I'm going to feel better. You know, I treat that spiritual condition, that spiritual malady, you know. But nowadays, you know, I treat it in a different way. You know, the drugs work for many years. They were a solution to a problem I always had, this fear-based spiritual malady, you know. That's what drugs did. They treated that spiritual condition, you know, that anti-life kind of feeling that I had. You know, I just couldn't get on with life, you know, it just was not my bag, you know. Living's for other people, you know. I ended up here by mistake. How do I get out? You know, and, you know, the solution I've got now, you know, involves... Put his name up there, I think, four times. God, you know, I wouldn't have thought that was going to be the case, you know. But that's one of the most important relationship I've got today is that one, you know, because that power, God, you know, that God is where I get the power, you know, the power to stay clean. The power to move forward in my life, the power to climb that mountain that I never seem to be able to climb, you know, the power to integrate with other people, to communicate, you know, the power to get free from those bondages of you know, fear and anxiety, you know, the power to live, to enjoy living, to be a part of life, the human race, you know, to be integral. You know, I couldn't be integral, I couldn't be part of, you know, I found it so hard, so therefore I tried to isolate as much as possible, you know, or get high. You know, nowadays I integrate, you know, I become a part of the human race, you know, and when I do that, You know, it doesn't involve doing things I want to do, you know, a lot of the time. It involves doing things for other people, a lot of things I don't want to do. You know, but by doing that, you know, I feel, you know, so much more whole on the inside, you know, and I don't have that sense of restlessness, that irritability, that discontent, and therefore I don't need to use to make myself feel better. That's all I was doing most of the time. I don't realise it now, but I used to use to make me feel better. You know, now I have other ways to make me feel better, and they're so much more pure than what it used to be. You know, I get to experience life now the way I always wish I could have. I couldn't have even imagined what it's like to experience life this way. But, you know, it's golden, it really is. You know, and if you're new around, you know, get involved in this way of life. You know, it's worth it. I'll leave it there.
Thanks, Ray.
And now I'll hand you over to our second speaker, Ruth, who has come to share her experience.
Thank you. My name's Ruth, and I'm a recovered addict. It's wonderful to be here tonight. It's such a pleasure to, you know, to come like 150 miles or so from home and to come and find exactly the same strong message of recovery and, you know, people who suffer from the same illness that I suffer from and have the same solution. There is a solution. You know, that's the first bit of good news. I didn't hear that very often when I was out there using. There is a solution. You know, I tried lots and lots of different things. People perhaps said, you know, this might help or you could try this. But, you know, there is a solution. You know, I found it at my home group in Plymouth. I loved what it said, actually, in the preamble. It said, drug addicts recover in DAA by getting a sponsor and working the steps. And it really is that simple. Took me a long time to get that. It was so simple, I couldn't see it. You know, I arrived in Plymouth many years ago and, you know, I can remember a time when I sat there in the middle of town and I thought, what am I doing here? You know, I'd kind of gone through so many years of using and all those kind of self-imposed crises and running away from things and, you know, I'll move here and everything will be all right and, you know, and I'd ended up in this town but quite by accident, you know, and I just didn't know what I was doing there. But I found out, you know, I don't think of that kind of thing as it was God's will, but, you know, I just feel that I was very, very fortunate to find a home group that had a very strong message of recovery. For me, you know, I used drugs, of course, for many years, and I felt a lot of what Craig felt, you know, that fear of being around people, that discomfort, that using drugs and alcohol, you know, kind of masked all that. You know, I wasn't the kind of addict who was constantly overdosing or, you know, I kind of kept this impression of having things reasonably together. You know, I brought my daughter up after a fashion. You know, I was I even had a job in the end. When I actually reached a point of desperation, things really didn't look too bad. You know, I had a job, I had a home, my daughter still lived with me. You know, to all intents and purposes, I looked like I was kind of doing all right, but I was broken. I was absolutely broken inside. You know, I experienced myself as I really am. You know, I had this moment of clarity where I realised that I was going to spend the rest of my life doing exactly the same things, be that taking drugs, be that, you know, going through numerous boyfriends and, you know, moving to new places, you know, just this constant chaos, constantly just feeling lost and like there was something missing. You know, I knew without a shadow of a doubt that I was going to continue to do exactly the same thing for the rest of my sad life. And I couldn't bear it. I really just couldn't bear it. And finally then I had the willingness to go to a group of people who I'd met on a number of occasions, and who I knew were serious, you know, and this had always been my problem with them. You know, I'd always felt they were far too serious, you know, for God's sake, it's only a few drugs. You know, this denial that I had around my using, but, you know, when I was that desperate, I knew where I needed to go. And the best thing about it was, as I said at the beginning, the message was so simple. You know, it was laid out for me by people with experience. You know, they didn't mince their words. You know, it was very, very simple. You're in trouble. Get a sponsor. Do what we've done. You know, and you too can have these results. Because I could see that these people had a good life. You know, they were happy people. They were laughing and joking with each other. They obviously, you know, they radiated a kind of comfort in themselves, a kind of, you know, something that I didn't have and I desperately, desperately wanted. And I had enough humility and enough willingness to just do what they did, to ask for help and, you know, to follow their direction. And it was only a very little bit, you know, it was a very little bit of willingness and a very little bit of faith, and that was all I needed. And with that little tiny bit, you know, I got a sponsor, I got some simple suggestions, and I started to put these things into action in my life. And that faith and that willingness grew very, very quickly because things started to change, you know, almost immediately. I felt a sense of calm. I felt that things were going to be okay. So I kept doing this stuff. You know, faith very quickly became experience. And, you know, I began to work the steps with my sponsor. And I had a really profound experience in that, you know, because I'd often thought that, in fact, I can remember saying to my sponsor, you know, what about this problem I've got, and what about that problem I've got? I'm going to need some help with it. And my sponsor very wisely said to me, you know, just work the steps. If you need anything else after that, fine, but just work the steps and see where you're at then. And for once in my life, I actually did what I was told, you know, and I focused on the steps. You know, it was like wearing blinkers for several months, you know. Quite voluntarily, I decided, you know, I wasn't going to do anything other than, you know, just live day by day and work these steps and put my best effort into it, you know, and that's what I did. And, you know, I went through the steps, and to my absolute amazement, I found that, you know, all sorts of things in my life began to get ironed out. You know, all my crazy thinking, all my kind of running around trying to control everything and trying to put everything right, and, you know, all that stuff began to kind of calm down and sort itself out. And I found that, you know, I didn't need to be like that. I didn't need to be constantly trying to control everything. You know, I was able to begin to get a connection with a higher power, you know, and to hand my will and my life over to that higher power on every level. You know, because when I first encountered 12-step fellowships, I had thought it was just all about the drugs, you know. But I found that, you know, I could hand my whole life over to a higher power, and the results were fantastic. And, you know, I've gone along and, you know, I have a very, very different life today. I've been able to achieve some quite amazing things, really. But I was reflecting today on how it's really just the ordinary little things that bring me such pleasure. You know, being able to talk to a stranger on the bus and not just feel completely kind of self-centered, and, you know, just little simple things in my life that mean I'm actually able to enjoy my life. Not any, you know, great events or, you know, fireworks going off or anything like that. You know, I live really quite an ordinary life on the whole. But it's how I feel about that life and how I feel about myself and how I'm able to conduct myself in that life and, you know, see where I can be of use to other people and feel that I have, you know, some purpose and some direction in life, you know. Thank you. And, you know, to be able to come here, to be able to come and share a message of recovery, to share my strength and experience with you is the culmination of that, really. You know, it seemed like something that seemed a bit odd to me years ago before I ever really got this. You know, why do people want to keep going to these meetings? But, you know, I know now there's nowhere else I'd rather be than you know, coming here to share a message with people and, you know, who knows, making a difference to someone's life. And I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thanks, Ruth. And with that, I'll hand you over to our final speaker of the evening, Dan, who has come to share his experience.
Thanks, Scott. My name's Dan, I'm Alex.
Hi, Dan.
Yes, thank you very much, and it's a thank you to our group, those home group members who asked me to come to share for you tonight, and it's a privilege and an honour. I'm wearing a tie, it's not something I normally do, I don't really like wearing a tie, but it's here to pay tribute to the group and to take this seriously, to honour those who haven't made it, and more and most importantly, because my sponsor told me to. I was told to wear a tie. I did what I was told, which, if you're anything like me, is a fucking miracle. I literally do have a T-shirt that says, "Don't tell me what to do," and I was a big fan of that. Don't tell me what to do. There's no point. I'm not going to do what you tell me anyway. I'm a rebel. I'm a defiant rebel. I'm an atheist. A militant atheist, I'm a Marxist, I'm a feminist, I'm whatever you've got, F it, really. That was my bravado, my ego, but deep inside, and also when I, Ruth used this great word, reflected, I think when I was forced to reflect, more often than not, I was baffled. I was baffled as a child, I was baffled as a teen, I was baffled as an adult, I was baffled as a drug addict. I was baffled. I was baffled as an employee. I was baffled as a boyfriend. I just baffled as a son. I just didn't get it. I remember walking to school once with my mates, and I was about 13 or 14, and we were talking about O-levels, and, what are you going to do after school? What's going to happen? You know, so I thought I'd become a lawyer. I thought I'd become a doctor. And I sort of was lagging behind them, just thinking, what are they talking about? They've been given some special lesson, because I certainly haven't had it, and I don't know what they mean. How do they know? I can't sort of make any decision whatsoever. And I was self-centred in my little world, going, what are they doing? I'm scared now. They've obviously got a plan and I don't. And we used to have to walk down in Chiswick, just across the Chertsey Road, so four lanes of traffic. And I'm standing in the middle of this on a little sort of stump of concrete. I'd lagging behind, they'd got across the road, and I'm stuck in the middle of the road. And this great big upset road going that way, and there's a bus going out, and all this traffic, and I'm stuck in the middle of the road. So I don't know what I'm doing. I just, you know, if I make the wrong move, I'm going to get killed, I'm going to get hit by something. And that really sort of captures my life in many respects. I was baffled, I had no direction, I had no idea what I was doing. But as Craig said, you know, when I started using, shortly after I started using, and it was great, because I didn't care anymore. I felt alright. I got something. At first I didn't even have to put it in my body, I just had it in my pocket. I get a little six deep down the Portobello Road, and I was the king. You know what I mean? I felt fantastic. And I was in the club, and nothing else mattered. As long as I had my special new friend, all would be well. And it was good for a while. You know, I remember as the 90s dawned, and new drugs came in, different drugs, whatever. And I remember a friend of mine, who I used with quite a bit, said, "You just want to be a gold card carrying member of a fucked up club, don't you?" I thought, that's it, that's what I am. That's it. This is the life. And I was making quite a lot of money at the time, and drugs were easy, you know, black cab, champagne, all the rest of it. And I just thought that's the way it was always going to be. It was always, the guys I was using with were going, you need to slow down, mate. You know, you need to put some of that money away. There's nothing you're talking about, you're an amateur. I don't know what I'm doing. And it all came to a grinding halt one day. And I was unemployed, on the dole, living in a squat. And trying to sort of recapture the glory days. And it was all about 10 or 20 pound bag a day. And I remember, you know, just like Craig said, I remember thinking, right, I got arrested. I remember thinking, right, now that is it. I'm going to take this seriously. I'm going to go to college. I'm a smart guy. I'm going to get even smarter. I'm going to do this course, and then I'm going to set up this company, and you're going to watch me fly high. And I remember the first day of this course was actually in the afternoon. I enrolled, and the first lesson was in the afternoon, introductory lesson. In the morning, I'd been in court pleading, please don't send me to jail, please don't send me to jail. I've got a course, I'm a responsible member of society. I had my tie on, the suit, and I even had a gold pen that I found somewhere. Anyway, so I'm at this college course down the Elephant Castle, and I'm right at the front, and I'm looking good, and I am the best student in the world ever. And I remember going home thinking, you know, that went really well. I was pretty, I was clean. I detoxed myself because I had to be, well, my court appearance had to be clean. And what's the problem? So the next day, I'm not at the front, but I'm still pretty keen. Yeah, I'm two or three rows back, and I'm, you know, not in the suit anymore. I'm, you know, eyeing up the woman. There was only one of them at the time. Anyway, 2 weeks later, I am at the back of the classroom, and I'm thinking, I could probably score at lunchtime and make it back for the afternoon. I could probably do that. And I remember being in the toilet going, ah, that lesson's, I don't have to do that. And then the next thing I remember was getting a phone call about 3 months later from the girl going, are you alright? Where are you? And it had gone. And I remember sitting there thinking, I'm sure I didn't want to do this. I'm sure I didn't. This I know this is bad news. I know that where I'm going, because I've been there before, it's not going to go very well for me. And I don't seem to be able to care about it. I don't seem to be able to do anything about it. I don't seem to have any real resources. And this is 1998. I didn't stop using for another 3 years. And during that time, I had a period of being clean and, you know, kind of assert my will, got a girlfriend, got a job, got a car, got a flat. And during this period, I met with my sister. She was very worried about me. And I've made this push, yet another push. And she flung her arms around me and she said, it's so good to have my brother back. And deep down, I knew that was a lie. Well, she may have believed it, I didn't. Deep down, I didn't believe it. Deep down, I knew I was the same thing. Whatever this thing that's baffling me, the thing that means I go and use when I don't want to, I use the right drugs as far as I'm concerned, but I use them in the wrong way, or the wrong time, or the wrong amount, or that I just can't seem to, me and drugs don't, as much as I love them, don't seem to be able to get on. And I started going to psychiatrists and doctors and therapists and drug workers and counsellors and all that sort of stuff. And again, I was baffled. I remember sitting with this very good doctor and he was saying, you know, what seemed to be common sense, really. And I remember thinking, I know those words are true. I know that's sense, that's logic. It's, you have all this training and it's good. But it just is like ping pong balls bouncing off the side of a battleship, as far as I'm concerned. Because I know I'm doing this, and the back of my head I'm going, yeah, whatever. Okay, because I know what I'm going to do it now. And I went and did it again, and again, and again, and again. Until finally I got to a place where this wonderful book, Alcoholics Anonymous, describes as the jumping off place. And where the thing that had been keeping me alive had gone, and that was hope. I had this tiny little bit of hope. And that was the thing that was actually killing me, and it had gone. And the wind blew through me. And when I read the words in the chapter Vision for You about the sort of this bewilderment, this terror, this loneliness, I just thought, Christ, I know that. That really is me. When you strip everything away from me, when you take the drugs away from me, and when I don't have what I want, which is always ridiculous, and I want a Bentley, and I want this beautiful woman, and I want millions of pounds, and I want for doing nothing. You know, when I sort of, and just me, that's how I am. I am scared. I'm baffled. I shudder at the thought of anything, doing anything, right? And The thing that really got me was that I knew that tomorrow was going to be exactly the same as today. Exactly. With one caveat, that it was going to be a little bit worse. And I was just on a downhill dunk, 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 dunk. Now, you know, I didn't come here with an arm hanging off or a long prison record or haven't killed anybody. And I knew that was irrelevant. I used with people who all of that had happened to, and they used just like I did. And they had died. I just knew that the game was up. And because I had explored, I didn't know this, I'd explored my reservations. I had come here, I'd tried a hell of a lot. I tried using drugs, I tried not using drugs, I tried doctors, psychiatrists, therapists, I tried rehab. But long, long list. It availed me absolutely nothing. And I thought, you know, the classic, I've got to know myself, yeah? I've got to learn about myself. Yeah. Waste of time, if you're like me. It didn't do anything for me whatsoever. What happened was that I got to a point one day where I had truly had enough. I was defeated. And the marker for this was I was so tired. I don't mean just physically tired. I'm physically knackered now. I mean deep, deep within me. All I wanted to do was sit down and rest for a couple of hours and not have to get up. I couldn't do that. If I was in a room on my own with a sofa and some drugs, I couldn't sit on the sofa. I could not take it easy. I could not relax. I could not just be with myself. No matter how many drugs I had, I just could not do it. And I felt haunted. There was this deep feeling of doom and gloom. A friend of mine in Plymouth described it, torture and doom. And I met these guys, just like Ruth explained, I met these guys, just like in this meeting here, men and women who had recovered. And I didn't like them very much. They were happy. I wasn't. They had lives. I didn't. They knew how to live a life. I had not got a clue. But I threw in my... Thank you. I threw in my lot with them, and they were the most detested group in town. Nobody liked them. What, in any way? Because they weren't talking about how they felt in meetings. They weren't talking about their fucking day. They weren't going, nye, nye, nye. They weren't... These people had constructive, happy, useful, purposeful, directed lives. And I signed up, and it's a no-brainer. I recovered. I recovered because I shut up and I did what I was told to do. It's that simple. I trusted my sponsor. He obviously knew how to live life. He screamed out of him, it beamed out of him. He projected an image of confidence, and he didn't suffer fools gladly. He just didn't seem to care. But when a newcomer turned up, when a suffering addict turned up, he was on it straight away. And I was standing outside this church, and this guy sort of ambles up and he's battered in front, and I was standing there because he'd only just started doing the work, and I was this guy, newcomer's coming towards me. I'm like, oh my god, what do I do? What do I do? I just, you know, and my sponsor just stepped in front with instant twist, and he just went bang, and he did this bit of 12 step work. And I just sat there open mouthed. I couldn't believe it. This guy that I was quite scared of, and you know, he would tell people, fuck off. You know, he said to me that sometimes it's the most spiritual thing you can say to somebody. If you're going to piss around, there's a door over there. The problem with this meeting is we haven't got a big enough sign over that door saying exit, yeah? And these are the kind of things he would say. And I'd be, oh my god. And he got hold of this new guy, sat down, cup of tea for this guy, gave him a fag, and he just started talking. He shared some experience. And I watched this wreck of a man, the hope began to flow into his eyes. And I watched this and thought, fucking hell, man. I want to be able to do that. I can. I can because I've recovered. I can because I'm not a particularly spiritual guy. I don't know what being a spiritual guy is. No idea. Not really interested. I am, however, I'm a man who lives on spiritual principles that are contained in this book. It's what you get when you work through the steps. And I did that, and I've got what my sponsor's got. I've got a great life. I've got a life that I'm proud of. I say I'm proud of you. If you want to speak to somebody who can explain what that really is like, go and speak to my mum. You know, I destroyed her life, and she, when I see her, she just smiles at me. She's grateful as I am. And yeah, this is a wonderful meeting, a wonderful group. And I thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Could you please keep your shares reasonably short so that everyone has a chance to share?